Pittsburgh Steeler fans, we are back. Didn't you just see us? My name is Brian Anthony Davis. Alongside with me is Tony DeFio, and we just had the Steeler Q&A, and we got down and dirty, and we Tony and I actually disagreed, which is actually good for us, you know?
Yeah.
Sparring partners.
Yeah.
But we're back with a brand new show, and this is something that we've been talking about for a long time, and we're going to call this Steelers Nostalgia. And I haven't seen anybody pop up in the live chat yet, and I'm hoping that does. I haven't seen anybody as far as viewers, so that might take a second to come in. But what we're going to do here is we are going to talk about the greatest memories we've ever had in Pittsburgh Steeler history. But today, we're going to talk about memories of backup quarterbacks. Now, Tony, before we get into the topic, let's talk about a little bit how this came about. All right. I was looking for some information for one of my articles. I'm doing the Uni Watch, and the Uni Watch is it's called Numero Uni, or Numero Uni instead of Numero Uno. I don't really know if that's working, but so what we're talking about here is, I had to go back and look for some information on Walter Abercrombie. And I know a lot about Abercrombie because I grew up with him. And I actually have fond memories of Walter Abercrombie. But yeah. I just wanted to get a little bit more for this article. So I was looking through and I found this article by one Tony DeFio. And it was not a Behind the Steel Curtain article. And so I was looking it up and I'm reading it. And I'm like, my gosh, Tony's as in-depth as I am on this. And it was one of my all-time favorite games that you talked about. And it was the Steelers against the Raiders, and they needed that to go into the playoffs in 1984. A crazy season, one of my favorite seasons. I think it's one of yours too, Tony.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of my favorites.
So I'm thinking, you know what? We need to just talk about the past sometimes. We talk about who's going to be the backup quarterback. Do they have a plan? What's going to happen here? Can the defense sustain all that? Yeah, we talk about that all the time on this network, and we're going to continue to do that, but not on this show. So if you want to talk about Steeler football for 2020, that's what the last show was for. This show is to go ahead and talk about the past and stuff that we love. And we're going to actually rank some of these guys down. We're gonna rank them from 5 to 1, and we're gonna see who you have in there, who your opinion is. And now I already see some people saying best backup quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. You know, there might be some guys in there that aren't your traditionally backup quarterbacks. They were the man in waiting. Like Cordell Stewart's probably not gonna be on the list because he was really never officially a backup quarterback. So we're going to talk about those guys, but whatever you want to talk about, this is a fun show. This is to let your hair down. And Tony, if you had more hair, you could let it down.
Right. Yeah. I'm letting it down, slowly. It's cascading down my back and to the rug, you know.
Tony, check this out. Look, I've got a mullet growing.
I know.
I've got wings.
That's right.
How about that?
Look at you. I'm jealous.
So we talk about all the time, and this is something that we've talked about in history, that the most popular guy on a football team is the backup quarterback. That is until he gets into the game and they're talking right about the guy behind him. So even throughout the Ben Roethlisberger era, everybody wanted a different guy to get that shot. People even wanted Mason Rudolph. When they got him, they might have not been as happy.
Right.
And that's been throughout the years. So let's talk about our great memories of backup quarterbacks. And I am going to go ahead. I'm going to add somebody because I saw one on the live chat, and he's from the same era as somebody else that's on here. So what we're going to do for number 4, we're going to double up. We're going to have a tie at number 4, but let's start with number 5, Tony. When you talk about best backup quarterbacks in Pittsburgh Steeler history, let's go number 5.
Well, that'd be, in my opinion, would be Byron Leftwich. I think he would, overall top 10 pick, to get him, to get a player like that in Ben's what, fifth year? That's pretty, that's a pretty big find for the Steelers back then, and helped them win the Super Bowl.
So why was he available? It was because David Garrard came out of nowhere and became an amazing quarterback for that team, the Jacksonville Jags. And Byron was, what was he, fifth overall in 2003? Was it fifth?
It was, I think it was fourth or fifth. And it, yeah, like you said, it was a year before Ben. So that he was considered a top-notch quarterback for a few years there before he fell out of favor in Jacksonville.
So what was your great memory of Byron Leftwich?
Well, I have a few. My first one would be the 08 Monday night game against the Redskins when Ben went down and Byron came in and threw that great touchdown pass to Santonio. I think they won that game fairly handily, and that's because they came, he came in and was a steady presence. And then my second favorite is he played in that the season finale against the Browns in 08 when everything was pretty much wrapped up. Excuse me. And he ran for a touchdown, and I didn't see it at the time, but on the sidelines, Casey Hampton and those guys, they were just cracking up because I guess he stumbled, and I guess he was never known for his running. So he stumbled on the way into the end zone, and everybody just had a just cracked up over that. So that's my second favorite. And my third would be the Monday night game against Baltimore in 2012 where they lost, but he actually ran for a touchdown. I thought that was pretty funny. And he broke his collarbone in the play, I think. So,
and, you know, he was wearing – that was one of the first times. It wasn't the first, but they were wearing the Bumblebee jerseys. That was I remember him. I mean, he played valiantly in that game. We used to joke. We used to call him Byron Sandwich. And but here's the thing about Leftwich. He's going to be a head coach in this league. Yeah. He's now the offensive coordinator with Bruce Arians. He's in Tampa right now. And boy, not too bad as one of your first gigs. You have as an offensive coordinator, and you also have Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski under you. So that's not too bad as well. He is going to be really good, but he doesn't need those guys. That's how really good Byron Leftwich is. So I love it. I want a big, I want a shout out to Big Marv 34, who I just brought him up earlier talking about on the screen, talking about how great Byron Leftwich is and how one of his favorites. He writes, what's goody to all Steelers Nation fans in the house? Bad and Tony, so glad to finally catch you guys. I work too much. So I love it. Thanks, Big Marv. Here's the thing.
Big Marv.
We have all these people that are regulars in the live chat that we know these names. We know Dave Shipley and we know Snowman and Frank the Tank. We know these guys. But there are so many regulars that we have that catch us on the podcast platform, on the streaming platforms. So thanks so much for those diehards that that we don't get to hear from all the time because they're catching us on the way to work. They're catching us when they're at work or at night. They're not watching it on YouTube, but now they're hanging out with us on YouTube right now. So get some rest. You earned it. And so thanks to you, Big Marv. Really appreciate you. What a great name, Big Marv. I want to hang out with Big Marv.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know what? I'm agreeing with you on Byron Leftwich. He was kind of hurt in the 2010 season at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So he was not able to come in. Dennis Dixon was actually the starter when Ben was on suspension for those first four games. They went 3-1. And I think Byron did play. He came in and played in that time, and I know Charlie played, then Dennis got hurt. They might have had four quarterbacks that season of 2010, but they did go to the Super Bowl. And Big Marv mentions Dennis Dixon being kind of good. You know, he's an honorable mention guy for me. With the guys on this list,
yeah,
I'm probably going to go ahead and look in a different direction, but Dennis Dixon didn't have the long career. But I remember Dennis Dixon in his first NFL start on, I believe it was 2009, and they really needed that game against Baltimore. And, I mean, he came in at the last minute, too.
Right.
It was a situation where Ben announced that he was ready to play on Saturday, and they said no. Dennis Dixon's right. been taking the reps, and he's going in. And right. I think they lost that game 20-17, if I'm not mistaken, and he was really good. Yeah. So I really think he would have I would have loved to have seen more of him, and it's a shame that he got hurt in college. Mm-hmm. He would have probably been a number one draft pick if he didn't have that devastating knee injury, but he still was able to have a good career in the pros. Right. Sean Manahan gives us $2. His top two would be Tommy Maddox, 2002, Big Ben, 2004. We're not counting Big Ben, but thanks for $2, Sean. We're not going to count Big Ben. He wasn't really meant to be the backup. He was a man in waiting. Right. Tommy Maddox, we might hear more from him later. Let's just say that. But as far as Byron Leftwich goes, I almost called him Sandwich. See, how rotten would that be? So as far as Byron Leftwich goes, I think he definitely needs to be on this list. So we'll go ahead and put him at number five. Right. Let's talk number four now. And this is, we're going to go back a bit. We're not going as far as Dick Shiner in 1969. actually, this one guy might have been a backup to Dick Shiner in 69, if I'm not mistaken. This was his rookie year, I believe. So we're going to talk about this guy and another one that he backed up with at the same time. So this is a tie here. Let's go back to the glory years of the 70s with these guys. Who's our tie, Tony?
Have to be Terry Hanratty and Jefferson Street Joe Gillum.
Jefferson Street Joe. Yeah, I got to tell you, those two, that's got to be a tie. Because when Bradshaw was struggling early on, these guys came in. Yeah. I mean, not a lot of people realize this, but Gilliam, is it Gillum or Gilliam?
I think it's Gilliam, but okay. I've heard it pronounced both ways.
Okay. Let's just call him Jefferson Street. So Jefferson Street Joe, he came in and he started the 1974 season for the Steelers. The season didn't start off that great, but he was solid, but Bradshaw made his way back in and took him the Super Bowl. But Gilliam was a very big part of that team and very important. They really needed him in there. So then we go to Terry Hanratty, who was, he was banged up at times, but here's the championship quarterback from the University of Notre Dame. And if all you know is Rudy about Notre Dame, then you don't know about the great history. And right. when we're talking about the great history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, great history of the Fighting Irish, Terry Hanratty was a great quarterback for them. And he also played college ball with one Rocky Blyer too. And they were big buddies here in Pittsburgh. Interesting thing about Terry Hanratty as well. He is responsible for one of the great nicknames of all time in Pittsburgh. I don't know if you know this, Tony, but we've talked about him in the past, and I'm always going to talk about him. One of my all-time favorite Steelers. I have his jersey, number 68, LC Greenwood. So,
oh, really?
What was his nickname?
LC?
Yeah.
Hollywood Bags.
Hollywood Bags. Did you know that he was just Bags? He wasn't Hollywood Bags at first. He was known as Bags because he wore a handbag. He was like Joey Tribbiani from Friends with the man purse. the man satchel. I mean, he had, but you're not making fun of 6'8", number 68. He was 6'8", and you're not making fun of LC Greenwood, but they called him Bags. His team could do that. So back in the mid-70s, Hanratty started a rumor. He started a rumor that the Steelers were going to trade himself and LC Greenwood to the Los Angeles Rams. Ha. And because of that, he became Hollywood Bags.
I never knew the origin of that nickname. That's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, so there you go. Victory Asher throws in $4.99. We really appreciate your hard work and dough. Thanks, Victory. Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam is number one, and he's definitely on our list here. We have him at number four, but Jefferson Street Joe, legendary Pittsburgh Steeler. You can't forget that guy. Here's a guy that didn't make the list, and Tony actually talked about putting this guy on the list, and it's Mike Krusik.
Yeah.
And Krusik was 6-0 as a starter, I believe, as a rookie. So when Ben Roethlisberger had his great 2004 winning, when he was winning these games, he broke the record of another Steeler backup, number 15, Mike Krusik, in 1976, who went 6-0 as a starter when Terry Bradshaw was out. Tony, why is Krusik not on this list?
Because he was the epitome of a passenger. He didn't throw one single touchdown pass. It was all about the defense in a rushing game that year.
So that's why we didn't put him on the list. He did not have a touchdown pass in his career, I believe, for the Steelers.
Yeah, he didn't have a touchdown pass in his entire career.
But he was really important to the team. And so we were doing a show the other night, the Steelers preview with Mike Beck, Dave Schofield, myself, and it was going to be on advertisements. So I went back and we were going to talk about the best Steeler advertisements of all time. And we talked about Joe Green, and we talked about, the fact that there was a Steeler Uniroyal tire called the Steeler tire. And then they did commercials for, of course, Elsie Greenwood with his Miller Lite commercials. Mm-hmm. You had Jack Lambert and Myron Cope with the Kennywood commercial. Of course, Franco had a bunch of commercials. Bradshaw had one for Redman Tobacco, which he wants me that. Today.
Yeah, he wore a toupee in the commercial.
And I watched all these commercials. Then there was another one with Bradshaw, and it was for, I forget the product, but it was for an aftershave. It was maybe Aqua Velva, but it was like a pre-shave gel, mm-hmm, that you put this gel on before you shaved, or it wasn't really a gel. It was like cologne. You slapped it on and then you shaved so it wouldn't burn. And it was Bradshaw teaching his backup quarterback, Mike Krusik, who was in the commercial, about this certain shaving product.
It was really, it might have been the biggest paycheck he ever had.
It could have been
in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. So we definitely had to talk about Mike Krusik there too, and bring him up. But Sean, thanks for bringing that up. Sean Manahan brings up Mike Krusik. So there you go. Some really interesting things. Let's go to number three, Tony. Our third backup quarterback here, and I've seen him come up in the live chat as favorites here, and he was pretty important, especially for that 2002 team. So bring up number three, my friend.
Tommy Maddox. I mean, he maybe saved the 2002 season. He was the toast of the town for a year, which is what most backup quarterbacks, that's usually what happens. They come in and look at what's his name for the Jaguars last year. He came in and set the world on fire for a little bit. That's what backup quarterbacks normally do.
Gardner Minshew, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about Tommy Maddox. What a great career, for the fact that here's a number one pick. He's supposed to be the guy that supplants John Elway. And a lot of people don't realize this. He was a quarterback that they would just rotate. Dan Reeves was rotating him back and forth with another quarterback. And in place of Bubby wasn't there yet, but it was in place of John Elway, just back and forth like every other series in games. It was Elway, not Elway, it was a Stout. And the quarterback that I'm thinking of was from the University of Virginia, and I'm not professional enough to have had that down, because I tell you what, it just popped into my head and I could remember them doing this during games. But was it Moore? Was a guy named Moore from the University of Virginia? But I mean, we're looking 1992. but he'd go back and forth. He just never made it in Denver, though. Maddox did. So he ended up with a couple other teams. Of course, he's out of the, he's completely out of the league. He's selling insurance in Texas. Then Vince McMahon calls. He's now with the LA, I think they were the LA Extreme, maybe. I forget what the name of the XFL team.
I think it was the Express. I think.
No, the LA Express was Steve Young's team in the USFL.
Oh, yeah, that's right. LA, I don't think it was the Extreme, but it wasn't the Express. All right.
Okay, so that's, we got to figure that one out too. So I think it was Sean Moore, the quarterback that I was looking for, from Virginia. And I'm thinking it's the LA Extreme, but if anybody in the live chat wants to help us out with that, we will mention you fondly. So Tommy Maddox, so he's out of the game. He's selling insurance. He comes back. LA wins the championship that year. And he's the XFL MVP. So now NFL comes a calling. And I was shocked that the Pittsburgh Steelers came calling for him. Yeah. He ends up on the Steelers. He was there in 2001. He was backing up. Actually, he could have been the third quarterback. Was he the backup to Cordell in 2001?
Yeah, he was number two in 2001.
And we never saw him. We saw him the last game of the season against Detroit is when we saw him. We were talking about that. I was right. Reed over and helps me out and says LA Extreme in the first XFL. So he doesn't really have to do much his first year. Cordell went 13-3 with that team. They went to the NFL, the AFC championship game, and they, which I was there and I'll never forget because he blew it. And I was at the game 4 years before where he blew it. And I actually had Super Bowl tickets that year, so I'm still upset about that. We actually got through in the lottery, and I had plane tickets to New Orleans and everything, so just didn't get a chance to go in. But Tony, what are your thoughts of him coming in that year in 2002? Take us through that.
Well, he came in in the second half of the third game against the Browns at Heinz Field. They were 0-2. Cordell wasn't having a good go of it those first two games. He kind of picked up where he left off in the AFC Championship game. And, of course, the defense was having a bad time of it, too. Tommy Gunn, he came in and saved the day. They won in overtime, and he was the star. I think Cordell may have started one more game early in that year, but it was basically Tommy Maddox's show the rest of the year. He got hurt towards the end of the year, and Cordell came in and won a couple of important games, actually. People forget that he came in and quietly won a couple of games. It was basically Tommy Maddox's show the rest of the year, and they had an offensive a passing offense that like we hadn't seen since maybe the late 70s. I mean, they really they were all about passing that year, so he was definitely a 1 year sensation, but it was a fun ride. It was really 2002 was a fun year.
But he stuck around, and he was a backup for a few more years on that team as well. And then you had two backups, in those early 2000s and mid 2000s that were both made this list, and they were there. At one point, he was number three to this other guy that I'm going to go ahead and mention. But you're talking about that season. Start off 1-3. Now, his first start was against New Orleans, and New Orleans was a very good team that year. And they didn't make it through. They barely lost that game. But after that, he rallied them. They went to the playoffs. You talked about him getting hurt later in the season, and it was a November game against the Tennessee Titans, and I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
I was worried. I was just as worried as I was when Ryan Shazier went down, because Tommy Maddox got the lucky end of it, but he was carted off the field. We thought he was paralyzed.
Right.
And it was just, and he was back in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then, and I remember when Shazier went down, and we went on right after that show. It was Monday Night Football, December 4th of 2000, 2017. And we felt lost, you and I. And the one thing we kept on talking about is like, hopefully this is a Tommy Gunn situation, a Tommy Mann situation. And it ended up not being that. And, you know, I got to tell you, this isn't a Ryan Shazier conversation, but, I'm so glad that his situation got better.
Yeah.
We were hoping that it was a Tommy Maddox. It was the same thing that happened with Tommy Maddox, and he wasn't that fortunate, and we as fans weren't that fortunate as well. But they go on to play Tennessee again in the playoffs. You know, Tommy and Chris Fuamatu Malafala and Antoine Randle-El gave us an amazing playoff game, which I watched not too long ago. And and that game in the snow at Heinz Field against the Browns was absolutely amazing. He just had a great season. They ended up playing Tennessee again the next week. And that's a game that they almost made it to the AFC Championship game. But you had a guy, I believe it was Joe Nedney, if I'm not mistaken, for the Tennessee Titans, that did the acting job of a lifetime, Academy Award job, and he was gloating about the job he did on Dwayne Washington, and he had a chance to kick again, and they lose that game. And I'm still mad about that game. That was one of the worst calls against the Steelers, especially there. Victory Asher says Tommy Gunn was lights out against Vic and Atlanta. That was like November 2nd or 3rd of that year, 2002. I was in the stands. Plexico Burress broke the team record for receptions. Receiving yards at 254. He threw. Do you remember the last play of that game in overtime?
I remember, and I think it speaks to, I was watching with my uncle, and it speaks to how your emotions can run things for you. He was clearly short, right? With the Hail Mary, he was at least a yard short, and my uncle was screaming, give it to him, he's in, when he clearly wasn't. Yeah, but I remember that game. That was, they were at what, 34-17 in the fourth quarter, and the defense kind of collapsed, which was a theme for that defense that year. They couldn't get off the field on third down, but yeah, it was an exciting game.
Two third and 18s. Michael Vick converted with his legs. Yep. And they couldn't stop him. What a game that was. I need to watch that game.
Yep.
I got to put that on my list.
That was
go ahead.
Bill Cowher kept saying after that game, he kept trying to emphasize, we didn't lose. I'm just trying to let you know, we did not. I kept telling my guys, we did not lose the game, but it sure felt like a loss. It was like the Cleveland tie from a couple of years ago. It just felt like a loss.
Absolutely. Big Marv asked about Bruce Gradkowski. If you guys remember, he played for the Oakland Raiders and he beat us when we played them. Yeah. Bruce had a couple good games here. Oh. Not enough to make the list though, for the Steelers, but I was a big fan of Bruce Gradkowski and I listen to him on the radio now. I think he works for, Pro Football Focus, and he's
very, very good. Yeah,
he's very good. I listen to him when he's on the fan. Let's go to number two, Tony.
Oh, number two, one of my favorite quarterback jobs of all time, backup quarterback jobs. Mike Tomczak. I mean, he came in and if you remember, Jim Miller won the job in training camp at 96. After Neil O'Donnell left, and he lasted a half, and before Cowher panicked and said, "Well, we can't have this. We need a more stable veteran." And he threw Tomczak in there, and he did a great job that year, taking him to the playoffs.
Yeah, they won the wild card game against the Colts. They crushed the Colts, and then the next week they just weren't. They were playing in the fog. You could hardly see that game. And they were played against the Patriots. They lost 28-3. I could still see Curtis Martin running down the sidelines in the fog. And something huge happened to me in my personal life that day. I was visiting my parents. I was living in West Virginia, and I took my girlfriend at the time. I took her to see my parents and to meet my parents, and she was staying there, and she was a Dallas Cowboys fan who were going to play later on that day against the Panthers, and they ended up losing against the Panthers, which I was glad, because just to screw with me and my dad, when Curtis Martin ran that 80-yard scamper all the way in the fog in the end zone, she got up and cheered and squealed to rub it in.
Wow.
I dumped her probably 3 weeks later, but I was praying on that moment. I mean, I didn't dump her on the spot. I still had to drive home with her, but I was done.
Wow.
Never. And I've told you the story about my my wife who cried during Jerome Bettis's last game, and we had only been dating a month. And I took her to Jerome Bettis's last game against Detroit that year, and she cried when the fans were shouting, "One more year, one more year." And I looked over, I'm like, this is the woman for me. So that's a story. The way your significant other taunts you when you don't taunt back, that goes a long way. So I knew she wasn't the right one for me because she dissed the Steelers. So that's I don't know why we got all the way into that, but we're talking about memories here. It's Steeler nostalgia, so I guess that's nostalgia. But
yeah,
Mike Tomczak, we could talk about that season where he ended up starting, but Tomczak was so important to that team for so many years.
Yeah,
in the early 90s, and when they were going to the Super Bowl in 95. When they went to the AFC Championship game for 94, he had to come in spot start a few times.
Yeah.
For Neil O'Donnell.
He played the first game. Yeah, he started the first game of the year against Detroit. That's that famous play you see him getting. I still don't know how he stayed in that game, where he just got absolutely blindsided as the starter in that game against the Lions at Three River Stadium. that was that game. He started, like you said, several more that year.
You know what? He did not. I can't remember his record as a starter, but I think it was pretty amazing for the Steelers. That's something I could go ahead and look up, but he was the guy.
Yeah.
He was definitely the guy as far as a backup quarterback. He could very easily be number one on this list, Tony, but he's not. I mean, you could make an argument for Mike Tomczak, and we could look at records. And we didn't pull up records because I told you about this idea maybe right before the show that we were doing it. And we put together our top five just like that. But Tomczak, as great as he was, I think we've got to go with number one. And I don't think a lot of people are going to disagree with our number one. Tony, take it away.
It's Steel Valley's own Charlie Batch. He started off in Detroit, and then he came here, and he was your typical backup quarterback. He was a veteran, and he was a steadying presence when he came in. And yeah, definitely Charlie Batch, number one overall. Maybe it's recency bias. Maybe it's the bias that he's from Pittsburgh. But yeah, I think Charlie Batch is on my list as the top quarterback or backup quarterback, at least in my lifetime.
You know what? He was a starter for Detroit, and he really wasn't bad in Detroit. Wasn't bad at all. But he really, when he came to Pittsburgh, he adopted being a backup quarterback as his role. And I'm the kind of guy that thinks you should have a backup quarterback in the Pro Bowl. Now you're going to call me crazy. I think there should be a backup quarterback in the Hall of Fame.
Don Strzok.
But that's probably going a little crazy, but he was just money for the Steelers.
Yeah. And he was, again, you know, he had no ego about it. I mean, those years after Ben took over from Tommy Maddox, I mean, I think we all agree they were pretty tough for Maddox. I don't think he really accepted the role, and rightfully so. I mean, he had a career resurgence in 2002, and they struggled in 2003. So they went out and they drafted a franchise quarterback, and he quickly came in and took at Maddox's place, meeting Ben. So, you know, but Batch was there. He was the guy. Like, if you the AFC Championship game against the Broncos in 05, his second year, Batch was constantly coming up to him and giving him encouragement and giving him advice. And he saw that all throughout Batch's tenure here. He was the one that Ben was talking to on the sidelines more often than not, as far as the backups.
So, you know, when you look at these two guys that we have at the top, you know, Charlie Batch had a 6-3 record as a Steeler starting quarterback. And then you go ahead and look at Mike Tomczak, had a 15-12 record as a Pittsburgh Steeler starting quarterback. They were both three games above 500. Right. You've got to remember, though, that, I mean, he was a starter. I'm talking about Tomczak was a starter for very much that entire 1996 year, albeit one game. And so you got to look at the fact that if you take those games away, Charlie Batch had a better record as a starting quarterback, as a backup quarterback. So I think that's something you've got to look at there. But I don't even remember Charlie Batch in Detroit. I know he was there, and I know he was there at the time. Somebody just, John Trench just says, Charlie Batch, Explore Your World just said Batch had very little help in Detroit, but he still had Barry Sanders starting. He was a rookie in 1998. He still had Barry Sanders there. He still had he still had Herman Moore there. He had some players there. But when he came to Pittsburgh, it just fit. He was home. Yeah. Some guys don't want to come home. Right. Remember, Terrell Pryor said, I was glad the Steelers didn't draft me. Now he'd do anything to come to the Steelers. And that's not a knock on him, but he didn't want the distractions of being home.
Right, exactly.
And Charlie Batch he is the ultimate Steeler, and he will go down. As years go on, Charlie Batch is going to get greater in the eyes of Steeler fans as a backup quarterback, because now that he's on the post-game show, he's a spokesman for the team. He is an ultimate Steeler now. And that career in Detroit, it's almost like it didn't happen as the years keep on going.
Yeah. And he, you know, another thing that weighs heavily into his favor, and we mentioned this earlier with Terry Hanratty and Joe Gillum. And, you know, he started games for them in 05 when they went to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, they barely made the playoffs that year. He won games in Green Bay. He won a game against the Browns on Sunday Night Football. You know, I mean, when you have your quarterback go down like Ben did in the middle of the year, I mean, if your backup comes in and falters, as we saw last year, you know, if your backup quarterbacks aren't on point, you know, that could cost you a game or two. And he came in and won some important games for them. And I think that weighs heavily into, you know, and then of course that game I'll never forget in 2012 against the Ravens. They didn't make the playoffs that year, but that he came in and won a very important game to keep him in the hunt at the end of the year. So, yeah, I think we have to remember some of the games he did win were during a Super Bowl year.
But oh my gosh, when he came in and won that game against the Ravens, they had no business winning that game, Tony. No one thought they were going to win that game, and he was absolutely incredible.
Right.
We've got a live chat. We've got a super chat here from Sean Manahan, $2. Thank you, Sean. We appreciate it. How do you guys forget the coin toss game?
Yeah, he was the starter there for the Lions.
How about that? I forgot about that. Oh, gosh. I mean, Jeff used to talk about the one of his earliest, not earliest, but one of his main Steeler memories from the holidays and Thanksgiving was that coin toss game. I remember I was an adult. And I was watching that game, and I was like, how are you missing this? How is this happening? And when they lost that game, and I think that's one of those games that's why they changed the rule. That's not the exact reason they changed the rule, but Jason Hansen comes in. You knew Jason Hansen wasn't going to miss a field goal. Right. He comes down and kicks that field goal, and they win that game. What was it, 16-13? I don't remember the score, but when he did that, you know, like the Steelers never had a chance because of they messed up the coin toss.
Right.
I mean, the refs messed that up and didn't give him a chance. And that's why I like the role that, you know, at least if they just score a field goal, you've got a chance to match it. They score a touchdown, you're done.
Right.
Because if you score a touchdown, that's the ultimate goal. That's not a, I don't want to say cop out, but that's not just like missing a field goal.
Exactly. And that was,
go ahead.
Oh, and that was the a fitting start to their. They had basically a 2 year slide after that. They or 3 year slide, I guess. They lost 18 of their next 24 games through the early portion of the 2000 season, and it all started with that coin toss game. That was kind of like the beginning of the end for that 90s run that they had under Cowher.
And as Jerry Cherry says, 77-3, then 7-9, and that's what happened in that season. You know, and you can go back to that being just, you know, completely pivotal. And they ended up, you know, the next season, 99, wasn't a very good season at all. And that's one of the reasons they were picking eighth in 2000 when they picked up Plexico. And then the next year, they would have made the playoffs. But Bubby came back to haunt them as a Minnesota Viking, because I believe the Minnesota Vikings, they rested their quarterback against the Colts, and yep. Bubby came in and they didn't win that game. And they didn't win that game, and all Pittsburgh needed was for Minnesota to beat the Colts and they were going to the playoffs.
Right.
And it didn't happen. And so there's when you're talking about another backup quarterback, and Bubby wasn't on our list because Bubby to me was more of a starter as well. But this, it all comes back to the backup quarterback sometimes breaking your hearts.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think we learned that lesson last year. If you don't take care of your own business, you might have somebody like Bubby Brister that you have to hope can take care of the business for you.
And he didn't do it, but he's still one of my favorites, number six. Well, Tony, we're getting ready to wrap up, and then Snowman chimes in with, how about the Steelers' top five of backups for a show name? The top five of backups?
Well, I think you meant maybe for the name of this show. Is that what you meant, Snowman? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Snowman gives us $5 for that, and we thank him. But I'm reading though Dave Shipley saying Bubby Brister's mom in the stands sucked. I guess she was really animated in the stands.
Yeah, they showed her a lot in that 89 playoff run.
So Knapp, who Knapp 1963 was telling me a story about how I believe it's his cousin or uncle who I met at the game when we were down there last year. How he knows Mara Hodge real well. And one night he was at home, and was this his uncle? I'm not sure. That got the call. So one of them was telling me the story that all of a sudden Bubby's on the phone at like 2 a.m. and call him at his house because Merrill got him to call. I don't think it was Knapp. I think it was Knapp's relative that was telling me that story, come to think of it. But he said, and this was just not too long ago, and Bubby was just one of those great personalities. That's a guy we need to have on the show. We need to talk to Bubby.
Oh, Bubby would be the best.
I talked to Bubby for about 5 hours, probably, and I would do the Chris Farley. Hey, remember when? Oh,
the stories that he would have.
Because I kind of grew up with Bubby. Bubby came around when I was in high school and through college, and he was just one of my faves. And he gave us that 1989 season as well, and that was just a tremendous season. There's some backup quarterbacks we didn't talk about, Tony, that you could talk about as backup quarterbacks. Somebody brought up Cliff Stout.
Yeah.
Cliff Stout was a solid backup, and then he started in 1983 before going on to the Birmingham Stallions of the USFL. We could also talk about David Woodley, Mark Malone. Jim Miller was brought up in the live chat as well. There's other guys, Brian St. Pierre, Rick Strom. You could bring up, there's some names that you could bring up that, you might even say who for backup quarterbacks.
Right.
But remember the backup quarterback and awesome stuff. 1983 saying Len Dawson and Johnny Unitas.
Well, Johnny Unitas never made the team. He never made the Steelers team. So that wouldn't be a good one.
Yeah. Johnny didn't make the team. Boy, was that a mess.
Yeah.
T. Martin. There you go. T. What's T? Why is T. Martin significant as far as a Steeler backup quarterback? Not something he did on the field, but something that he's associated with.
He was one of the many quarterbacks that were drafted ahead of Tom Brady, right?
Right before Tom Brady. They picked him. Oh. The Steelers picked him in the fifth round. No, I'm not talking right before, but in the fifth round, and the Patriots took him in the sixth round.
Yeah.
And I believe the Patriots were picking high that year too. So I'm not sure where they might have been pretty close, and he went right beforehand. So yeah, there you go. So this was a fun, lively show, Steeler nostalgia. I hope everybody had fun with it. If you want to come up with a name for this show, you could throw it in the live chat. But since we're wrapping up, you could send it to my Twitter, BTSCBAD. If you want to go ahead and do that, Tony, do you have what's your Twitter account, or do you don't want to throw it out there?
No, yeah, Defio Man. I don't know how I came up with that name, but it's been my name for over a decade now.
Defio Man. Oh, I like Ryan O'Toole's The Retro Show. Let's pull that.
I like it.
I like that. The Retro Show could be a good one. Jerry Cherry Band says, smash the like button. Yeah, check the show out. I really appreciate this. This is not going to be a every week thing. It might be an every other week thing. It might be a special thing, or maybe it just sticks. But we talk about the 2020 Steelers all the time, and that's what we need to do. We need to talk about the current Steelers, but every once in a while, it's fun to go back into that time machine and talk about the great years that continue to make us a fan and shape us as a fan. And that's a lot to talk about. Robert Sassovitz. How about The Hangover?
There you go. Well,
hey, hopefully you know what? I think we might try that. We might wait till the fall, but we might try The Hangover.
I hope we have some Hangover shows this fall. That'd be great.
Definitely. We do not have a catchy sign-off for this one. So, you know what? Let's go with little Doc Brown and Marty McFly, and we got to get you back to the future, Tony Defio. So, with that being said, for Tony, I'm Bad. We love hanging out with you guys. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Great show, everybody.